So enough said, anyway. I encourage you to at least have the roadmap in front of you and follow along. And we'll continue to ask the population here to read as we go along. And in chapter 1, we finished up last week with verse 11, which was question number 9. And what were the people told to do? Well, they were told to prepare their provisions or their victuals and get ready to go. They're heading for the promised land. The next question, number 10, it takes in verses 12 through 15. Read along with me, please. To the Reubenites and to the Gadites and to the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, "Remember the word which Moses, the servant of Jehovah, commanded you, saying, 'Jehovah your God gives you rest and will give you this land. Your wives, your little ones, and your cattle shall remain in the land which Moses gave you beyond the Jordan. But you shall cross over before your brothers in battle array, all your valiant warriors, and help them. Until the Lord Jehovah gives your brothers rest, as he gives you, and they also possess the land which Jehovah your God is giving them. Then you shall return to your own land and possess that which Moses, the servant of Jehovah, gave you beyond the Jordan toward the sunrise.'" So where does the sun rise?
Thanks. I couldn't figure it out.
In the east, yeah, just like here. Comes up in the east and then goes down in the west, doesn't it?
So does that mean the Jordan runs east and west?
Well, Jordan divides east and west because what side of the Jordan are all the Israelites on right now?
East side.
They're on the east side. And so the promised land is on the west side, which is the other side of Jordan. So the first question there, number 10, was, who was left behind? Bill?
I've got a question.
Well, wait a minute. I had a question first.
It's pertinent to the answer.
All right. Go right ahead.
When Moses was leading the people, there were a certain group of men that would be prepared to go to war between a certain age and a certain age. Who were they? What was that age range? You know that?
20
or 50 or 60 or something?
They're from 20 years upward, and I suppose as long as you could carry a spear or a sword or whatever and fight, defend yourself, you would be eligible to fight.
Everybody that was left behind was everybody that didn't fit in that group. The older men, the younger men, youths, the women, the children, and all their flocks.
So are you talking about the wilderness wandering?
No, I'm talking about who was left behind on the east side of the Jordan.
Okay, we're going to get to that in just a minute. Well, in fact, I just read it, didn't I? Okay.
Didn't you just ask that question, who was left behind?
Yeah. So, who was left behind? Anybody?
The little ones and the cattle.
And the cattle. Yeah, and Carol?
But only for the Reubenites, the Gads, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. The rest of the women and children and whatever that belonged to the other tribes went across.
All right, exactly. So, what I put down for the answer is women and children of Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, those tribes, their livestock, in some translations says livestock, cattle, in some translations it says possessions and goods. Okay. So, we're going to develop that a little more. And in verse 13, there's a phrase that caught my eye as I'm studying this. It says, "Remember the word that Moses commanded." So all this that's going to follow is what Moses commanded. And he's Jehovah is reminding Joshua to remember what Moses had commanded. So that comes down to the question, how come these people are going to be staying behind? And to really flush this out, I'm going to turn back to Numbers chapter 32. And the narrative actually runs from the first verse clear to the 33rd verse. But we're not going to read all of that. But I kind of like to cherry pick it to develop a thought. And I put a title on this narrative of my own. And that title is, God Listens. God Listens. So in verse 5 of that narrative, I picked out the phrase that, where the people say, the people, which are the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, do not take us across the Jordan. And in verse 6, Moses says to these Israelites, shall your brothers go to war while you sit here? Okay, to backtrack a little bit. These three tribes came to Moses and said, we don't want to go into the promised land. Look at this lush land that we have here before us. We want to stay here because we are men of cattle and sheep. We're men of the... We're stockmen, so to speak. And this is a land that we want. So Moses actually said, well, let's talk about it. And so he asked him, shall your brothers go to war while you sit here? So they're going to be on the east side of the Jordan, and the rest of the Israelites are going to be on the west side of the Jordan. The Jordan, or the west side of the Jordan, being the what? The promised land. It's Canaan land. Promised land. In verse 7, Moses says, why are you discouraging the sons of Israel? In verse 8, this is what your fathers did. Okay, so backtrack in history, 40 plus years, I don't know how many, but you remember the narrative there where the spies were sent out to Canaan land. They all came back except for Joshua and Caleb with a negative report. The people grumbled. They lost faith. Oh, we're going to die here. We should just go back to Egypt. Why'd you bring us out here to die? So Moses rebukes these new people that hadn't been through that. He rebukes them for that. Reminds them the history. This is what your fathers did. Then in verse 17, we'll skip that discussion that Moses had with the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the tribe of Manasseh. And they defend themselves. They say, we will arm ourselves. In verse 18, we will not return until the Israelites have conquered all Canaan land. Our inheritance has fallen on the east side of Jordan. I thought the Canaan land, everything on the west side of the Jordan, was a promised land, was promised to the Israelites. But here we find out that I've been mistaken. Because the Reubenites and the Gadites and Manasseh, they want the land on the east side of the Jordan because it suits them. So Moses said, okay, you can have that land. So is Moses breaking faith with God here because he allows these three tribes to not go into Canaan land? That's the promised land, isn't it? Just a little something to think about. I thought about it quite a bit. Does the east side of the Jordan, where they are, the land that they want, does this qualify as the promised land? Well, yeah. Because what did God promise the Israelites? What would identify their land? Carol? How did they identify their land?
Well, it was the land that God would give them. And so they're asking God.
That's true.
They're not telling God, but they're asking.
That's true.
Faye?
Goes to the Euphrates.
Excuse me now?
It goes to the Euphrates River.
Yeah, okay, but... Okay, but you're not getting my hint here. I'm walking around. Eileen? Everywhere the tread of your foot or sole of your foot touched is the land that I'll give you. So in that respect, that land is the promised land for these three tribes. And in verse 25, these three tribes make the promise, your servants will do as my Lord, which is Moses, our master, commands. They agree. And then finishing out verses 28 through 30, this is a section where Moses commands Joshua to remember this agreement that or covenant that they made. In verse 29, it outlines the covenant. It's kind of an if, then, and a not. In verse 29, Moses says, if they go, which means if they go, if the valiant warriors go into the Canaan land on the west side of the Jordan and fight with their brothers, then they will get Gilead. And in verse 30 of that, if they don't go, if they break this covenant, they get land in Canaan. So they can't hardly lose out, can they? That's kind of a strange punishment. But their request was, we want this land. And God, through Moses, granted that request and said that if you don't do as you have agreed, then you'll have to go into Canaan land and get your inheritance or you'll totally lose out. Yeah? No? I think they would have totally lost out because I don't think that God would stand by them if they had not followed through with what they swore to Moses that they would do. Carol?
Well, when you're talking about this, it makes me think about something I've not thought about before, because this is a covenant with Moses, which means this happened before they all went into the promised land, because he couldn't have gone over there. So what was this was after they'd already sent the spies out?
The 12. It was after they said he sent the 12, yeah.
The first 12.
The first 12.
Okay, so they already knew that the land for grazing was better on this side than that. For years had been thinking about this.
Well, evidently they made their own assessment. They evaluated that themselves, and they had a choice. And Moses said in verse 13 of Joshua chapter 1, remember the word that Moses commanded. And I didn't really focus on who's talking there. But I would assume If you assume something, you can really get yourself in trouble. But I think God was directing Moses, or not Moses, but Joshua there, to remember that Moses had made this agreement. So he calls them to fulfill that agreement. So, pressing on, think about that. And if you want to have some more discussion about it, if you think that I'm totally all wet, you know, that's fine. Because to tell you the truth, this is the first time I really thought in depth about this. I'd never really made the connection that, hey, three tribes stayed on the east side of the Jordan River, and everybody else went across. So moving on to the next question, how much time passes between Numbers 32, what we're just talking, and Joshua chapter 1? And the question in my mind popped up, a little or a lot? Carol?
Well, I know that after Moses died that they mourned for a month.
Okay.
And then I think they had another time period. I'm thinking another month to get ready to go in, but I'm not positive about that.
Okay, I wasn't positive about what I was thinking either. So 2 months, would that be a little or a lot?
A little.
A little? Everybody said a little? You're mumbling. Come on. Have convictions in what you're thinking. Okay. I chose a lot. And that doesn't mean 50 years or a year or whatever. It's just more than a little. It's more than a couple months, I'm pretty sure. And this is how I came to that conclusion. In Numbers 32, which we didn't read that whole narrative there, in verse 27, it tells us that they built cities. The three tribes built cities, and they built sheepfolds. At least Reuben did. The tribe of Reuben did. So, and they, let's see, it was actually Reuben built the cities in there in verse 27. So you don't build a city in just a couple months. Granted, they took over a lot of cities, just like their brothers will when they get into Canaan land proper. Actually, I suppose you could call the east side of the Jordan Canaan land too, couldn't you? Not having a map like Larry would have, it's kind of hard to nail all this stuff down. But the Moabites live on the east side of the Jordan, right? The Ammonites and the Hittites. But they also live on the other side of the Jordan, too. Because the children of Israel are going to go through there and whoop up on all those people and take the land from them, take their cities. So I'm going to say it's more than a little, quite a bit more than a little, because it just takes time to build those things. Anybody want to challenge me on that? How about you, Ron?
You asking me?
Yeah. Your name's Ron, right?
Well, I would suspect or report that's not their land. They're going in and possessing that land, and I'm sure there's people there in cities already. They may have conquered those cities, and the people that were there, Og, and I don't think there's another one, kings that came out and they were defeated. So there were inhabitants already in the land, and they had towns and cities already, so whether or not it was, they went out and did a scorched earth and started from scratch or not, I don't know. But it's like what's going to happen when they cross the Jordan. They're going to subdue existing cities and take over the cities and the farmland and eat produce that they didn't plant.
Yeah.
So it's already there.
Okay. So y'all get what I'm trying to do here, though. It's trying to get you to think about and myself too, something that I really hadn't thought about much before. When I read the Bible, a lot of times I read it and I just think everything goes pow, 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 just right end to end. And there's no gaps anywhere. But the reality is there are gaps in time and stuff that I don't really think about. So I think we've worked this over pretty good. I will say in response to your answer, Ron, and that they have whooped up on the Ammonites and the Moabites and a lot of those people getting to where they are right now on the east side of the Jordan. So they've been working on that for a while. And first, the next question, how did the men react? Diane Lindsay, would you please read verses 16 and 17 for us in chapter 1?
And they answered Joshua, saying, "All that you have commanded us, we will do, and wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we obeyed Moses in all things, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses."
Okay, thank you very much. So how did the men react? I found three things that I wanted to focus on in that reading. Can anyone read my mind and pick out one or two or three of them? Bill?
Where you lead, we will follow.
Wherever you send us, we will go. Wherever you lead us, we will go. That's one that I put down. Carol?
We will obey Moses.
Yeah, what you command us, we will do. And you mentioned Moses, and that was the third thing that I picked out from here. The people say, just as we obeyed Moses in all things, we obey you. So they're actually saying, we'll obey God. Because Moses was a prophet. He was a mouth of God. And so is Joshua now. We went through that last week, how he was appointed by Jehovah God. And so when they speak and when they make decisions, they do that with God in mind. They don't always make the right decision, though, right? Correct? Bill?
There's something else, too, I hadn't really focused on. They said they would follow him. They said, "Only Jehovah thy God be with thee as he was with Moses." It's like they were making a blessing on Joshua.
Were they making a blessing, or were they making, what's the word? A requirement on Joshua?
Like a blessing to me.
What they're doing is acknowledging the fact that Joshua is now the leader in place of Moses.
Okay.
And whatever he says they're going to do, and then if anybody rebels against that ruling, is put to death.
Okay. So the people that are speaking here are not the whole 12 tribes. It's just the three tribes. If we're following through with context, it's the Reubenites, the Gadites, and half tribe of Manasseh. And they've been talking about their responsibility and what they agree to do. They're, if you will, they're sort of making a covenant. And they're telling Joshua that we'll do all you command us to. Wherever you go. We'll obey you just like we did Moses in all things, only if God is with you. May the Jehovah your God be with you as he was with Moses. So they're kind of saying, we sure hope God's with you. We hope that you're doing good like Moses did, because they remember all that history. They don't want to be following somebody who's going to lead them astray. So they're kind of putting their faith in Joshua and letting him know it. Okay. Any comments on that? All right. Ann, would you please read verse 18 for us?
Whoever rebels against your command and does not heed your word, and all that you command him, shall he be put to death. Only be strong and of good courage.
Okay. Thank you. So, this sounds like a pledge to me. Anyone disagree with that? Carol?
No, I don't disagree with it, but if I was Joshua, I would have been nervous because the people didn't follow Moses all that well.
That's a good point, isn't it? Yeah. They grumbled a lot.
They said many times over that they would do as God directed them to do, and then they did not do.
Mankind has been fickle all through time, haven't we? We always... When we say something, I'm sure that we believe it when we say it, but it's really hard to follow through, be consistent all the time. Thanks be to God that we have a Redeemer that is merciful and gracious. So what was their pledge? That's the question that I'm asking. And I actually... had three points in that too. The first one that I picked as their pledge, they stated that anyone who rebels against your command and does not obey your words in all you command shall be put to death. I guess that's not three, is it? I wrote it out in three lines, so I said it was three. So that anyone who rebels against the command of Joshua, spoken command or request, they, of these three tribes, put themselves at jeopardy to be executed if they don't follow through on their pledge. And then they had a request. What was their request in that one verse? Their request of Joseph or Joshua.
Be strong
and of good courage. Is that going to be easy to do? As a human, no. But, Bill?
They're speaking to Joshua, aren't they?
Yep.
He was one of the ones that said, when they spied out the land, if God be with us, we can do this. Be strong and of good courage. Yes, it's not going to be hard for him at all. He believes.
From that aspect, yeah. And what do you call that?
Faith.
Faith. That's we use Joshua as an example of faith, the faith that, kind of faith that we all want to have. And they're just saying, be strong and courageous. And I think that they're saying that not in disbelief, but in, yeah, let's go get him. Be strong and courageous. We're behind you. Carol?
Well, I'm wondering if it's sort of like whistling in the dark, if whether or not they're just saying it to Joshua. Whether they're not saying also, be strong and courageous. They're talking about to themselves, too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I can see that. They're trying to encourage each other and talk themselves into something more positive. I can see that. So, also connected with this last verse, I'm asking myself, well, what's Jehovah's pledge in all this? And it actually, it's not just this last verse. It's in the whole chapter. And I focused on verse 5, where Jehovah says, I will not fail you or forsake you. Is that valid today?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. I fully believe that. If we're faithful to God, if we do the best we can, and we keep reassuring ourselves of our faith, I believe that God will not forsake us. We may forsake Him. We might do it and then come back even. But I take myself as an example. I am the most blessed man on the earth. God has been so good to me. But I don't have a speedboat, an airplane. I don't have a big motorhome. I don't have a huge bank account. But I do have three meals a day, and I have a roof over my head. I haven't got to do everything I wanted to do. And all I wanted was to go everywhere, to see everything, and to have two of each. And I didn't get to do that. But I am blessed. And then verse 9, Jehovah your God is with you wherever you go. And I think our God is with us everywhere we go too, if we take Him along with us. Ron?
We have to remember that this was a fulfillment of a promise that God made to Abraham way generations in the past. He took Abraham and he says, your seed will be like the stars, sands of the sea, uncountable, and this land is what I'm going to give. He never saw that promise. But he was promised that God would fulfill that promise. He made a covenant.
Indeed. And Abraham did believe that even though he never saw it, right?
Yeah.
It's a good example for us too, because lots of times we might not ever see what we've been promised. Richard?
Going back to with what you were talking about with time, and you said when you read the Bible you think, okay, it's just boom, boom, boom. Well, part of that is because today we can get in a vehicle, we can go to Portland in no time at all. If we get hungry or thirsty, well, there's always a McDonald's.
Yeah.
And back then, trying to get people to go somewhere is very difficult. Even today, to try to organize something and have people go. If you went over and you took 20 people and you went over to the beach and you have them start walking up and down the beach to get ready to cross over a river, there'd be a lot of complaining because a lot of people don't walk on a beach very well. I mean, there's always hidden factors.
Yeah.
Like Brother Carol said there with the, people grumbling all of the time, that I'm pretty sure Joshua probably thought, it wasn't going to be as easy as just for him to speak and, with all encouragement and everything. Because sometimes trying to get people to go somewhere is a lot harder when you have to have provisions, you have to have a lot of different stuff. Just crossing over to get into the land to fight. And that's not even thinking about, you're crossing over a body of water. People on the other side can see you. It's not like they don't prepare for, those things too. So I think it's a lot more than what we realize today because of how easy it is for us to go somewhere today. I mean, we can go, to Portland, get on a plane, and we go anywhere. And
sure.
Within 8 hours, you've flown a lot of places. And back then, you're on foot, maybe a horse, a donkey, a camel, or whatever. It's not that easy.
That's really a valid point. And, here in the United States, we are so lucky. And I didn't really realize that until I was allowed to go out of country and like to South America, which we think is really progressive, continent. But in the United States today, and these are facts, that the three top billionaires in the United States have more money than the other half, the bottom half of the population of the United States. Three men have more fine money, possessions, whatever, than half of the population of the United States. Historically, people like you and I, which we're like middle class, And I think we've got it pretty easy, actually. I know I do. But all through history, what was the main thing that people worked for in their lives? What they spent most of their time during their lives doing?
Food.
Just getting enough to eat. They would work 12, 18 hours a day just to have something to eat. And if a person thinks about that, you can get things in a little better perspective, get history in a little better perspective, and just know how lucky we are, how blessed we are. Okay, so we got a little field there, which I don't mind doing that. I kind of like to talk about that stuff, especially when I feel like I know a little bit about it. A little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. So moving on to the Chapter 2 worksheet, would like to begin by reading verse 1 and answering or talking about that first question there. How many spies did Joshua send out? So Chapter 2, verse 1. Then Joshua the son of Nun sent two men out as spies secretly from Shittim, saying, "Go view the land, especially Jericho." So they went and came into the house of a harlot whose name was Rahab, and lodged there, or laid down there, is another translation. So, how many spies did Joshua send out?
Two.
Not 12 this time? Just two. Okay, so it's different than the first time, isn't it? Did he send any women? No, it was just men, wasn't it? So how did Joshua send the spies?
Secretly.
Yeah, in secret. King James Version says, to spy secretly. Where did they stay? The house of a harlot named Rahab. What were they told to do in that verse?
View the land.
View the land, yeah.
Especially Jericho.
Especially Jericho, yeah. So, how long is it going to take them to view the land? It's a fairly big land, isn't it? I mean, it's not something that you could look over in a day. It's going to take them a little while. But we don't get a feeling for that when I read this in the past. Here's a question, a little food for thought, something to think about. Why would the spies pick such a house as the house of Rahab?
Lots of traffic.
Lots of traffic, yeah. Wouldn't be unusual for men to go in there. Exactly right. Okay.
She's one of the invisible people in the city where people wouldn't be looking after her, unless, of course, they wanted her.
Are you sure? What land is this? It's Canaan. Palestine. What are the people that live there? The Ammonites, the Moabites, and there's a whole list of people that they're going to have to overcome, right? Are they children of the high God, the true, the living God? Who do they worship? They worship
idols,
yeah, the idols. They have several gods, lots of different gods that they serve. So, just what do you guess that this nation or country as a whole, these countries as a whole, what would you feel that their morality would be? Would they be extremely moral people? I mean, just in general, we're just thinking, we don't have any proof on this, but would you suppose that they would be really moral people?
No.
We wouldn't have any reason to feel that they are extremely moral because they worship idols. They do not worship a living God. They worship a piece of wood or a carved stone. I just love the descriptions of the carpenter takes a piece of wood and he carves an idol and he bows down and worships it and he takes what's left over and he burns it to warm himself with. I mean, I think that's funny, and I just can't hardly imagine the people do it. But people today do that sort of thing too, Carol.
Studying in 2 Corinthians about the man who had his father's wife, who it was abhorrent to the locals that they would not have put up with somebody like that, and the Christians were. So just because they may be amoral in some way doesn't mean that they don't know some of God's other laws that they keep.
Scripture tells us that the Gentiles have a law unto themselves, right? That law that Larry taught on quite a bit. Yeah, that's true. But I'm talking in wide generalities. And so the fact that Rahab is a harlot might not be a very big deal in this society that the Israelites are coming in to take the land from. This is just my own thought. And I also put down that they'd pick such a house for hiding and for cover, as Brother Carol suggested. That would be typical for a man to be men to be going in and out of there. But we have to remember too that this is just not just her abode. It's her family's abode too. So there may be children there and, you know, lots of different things. Carol?
Well, I'm also remembering that she was on the city wall. So it's this strategic situation for them to have picked her because her house was in the right place for an escape or whatever. And of course, because the providence of God had prepared her for understanding how great God was, which they didn't know, but God did.
Yeah, I like that comment because from my point of view, and you don't necessarily have to agree with this, I don't think they picked it. I think it was God helping them get through the land because they were in the land for a while. According to the narrative, they're pretty close to leaving town. And so they've done whatever they're going to do. They've been there for a while, and they're just hiding. And you mentioned where she lives. Well, I got a little information on Jericho, and maybe you've all heard this before, but Jericho had two sets of walls, and that Rahab's dwelling was on the wall, actually in the wall. The outside wall, these walls were made of double brick. They're called double brick walls. And the first wall was 6 foot thick. So here's brick, 6 foot thick, for their outside wall. The inside wall was 12 foot thick. That would be really something formidable to get through if you were attacking the city. Rahab also had a window. She might have had more windows than just one, but she had at least one, we know that. And she had access to a roof, because Scripture mentions where the men were hidden. So that she lived in a pretty good place, I think. Being on the wall, very, very secure. And evidently, right on the traffic lanes, people could come and go fairly easy. So, Anne, would you read verses 1 and 2 for us here in chapter 2.
Now Joshua the son of Nun sent out two men from Achan Grove to spy secretly, saying, "Go view the land, especially Jericho." So they went and came to the house of a harlot named Rahab and lodged there.
2 and 3, please.
And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, "Behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country."
Okay, thank you very much. So then I posed the question there, the number 2 question. How long were the spies in Canaan land before they were discovered?
We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. Okay, so we can just suppose it was a short time or a long time, but we don't know. But we do know in verse 2 that the scripture says that tonight.
Yeah.
So when this conversation took place with Rahab, it was tonight. It was that night, whichever one it was. So one of my questions that I developed out of the first question there, how long were they there? Did they fool anyone? Did they fool everyone?
No. No to both.
Guess not. No, because they were squealed on, right? They were reported on. So, in fact, they were actually described as men of the children of Israel, and their purpose was described also. They're here spying out the land. So, who told of their presence? Who was told of their presence, I should say? That's what I wanted to ask. The king of Canaan, of Jericho. So here again, this is something I always read over. I always had this thought in my mind that Canaan land had one king over the whole territory. It's not true. Many cities had their own king, or maybe a king would have a couple of cities or whatever. But the thing we need to focus on here is that Jericho had its own king. He heard about the spies. He knew their presence was here in Jericho, and he knew what they had been doing. So, Carol White, would you please read verses 4 and 5 for us?
Then the woman took two men and hid them. So she said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And it happened as the gate was being shut when it was dark that the men went out. Where the men went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them."
Okay. Your book, your Bible, uses the word "may." My American Standard uses "will." So "may" or "will." "May" has some chance in it. "Will" means, yeah, you're gonna catch them. And I just spotted that, so that's why I blurted that out. The question number 3 is, how did Rahab respond to the discovery of her contact with the spies? How do you think that she responded? Bill?
What I'm hearing you ask is, she took them and hid them.
Yeah. Okay, she took them and hid them. Okay. What'd you say, Ron?
She lied.
Did she?
She said she didn't know where.
Okay. All right, I agree with Ron. Sure, she did lie, but I put down for my answer part true and part lie. What did she say? She said they were
here.
They were here. Was that true or false? That was true, right? So, you know, a little bit of truth. You can throw that in there, and then you can say just about anything else and kind of fluff it all over. So then the lie part was they left. Go get them. Well, go get them wasn't a lie, but they left. That was a bald-faced lie, wasn't it, Bill?
Not a spoiler, but she kind of, in her heart, knew the end of the story already, and she was protecting her family because she knew the city was going to be destroyed.
Well, she probably thought so, Carol.
Well, she has seen the power of God in this whole 20 years. They have learned.
You read ahead, didn't you?
And they have learned that. But the thing I wanted to say is she is putting her life on the line for the spies right now. If she's caught in this lie, if they go upstairs and search and find the two spies, she and all of her family will die. So at this point in time, she is putting their life over her life, basically, or putting her life in the hands of their God.
Okay.
Because she's believing what she's heard about him.
Okay. So when I read that, I made this evaluation about Rahab. Rahab demonstrated knowledge and wisdom. She's street smart, isn't she? She knows how to handle people. She knows what to say and maybe what not to say. She has the wisdom to think ahead and to weigh things out. Do I want to tell the king that, yeah, these are Israelite spies, they're upstairs on the roof and blah, blah, blah? Or, like Carol was saying, she has some knowledge of what's been going on. She's heard stories. So, and she makes a decision, a rational decision here. It's not that God reached down in her heart and made her do what she did. She's a human being just like the rest of us. She makes her own decisions. And Carol had the point, made the point, if she were caught, she and her family probably would have paid with their lives. Okay. So we're finishing up there on question three, and when we come back next Wednesday, we'll start there. And if I can remember, there was a little question that I wanted to ask about her decision, and maybe we can talk a little bit about that. Thank you all so much for being here and for helping me out.